Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism, coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Anthony Dockrell. Now, coming up, the immigration debate hots up in Australia and across the media. First up, Andrew Bolt's contribution to the debate has caused a storm, and not just because he singled out ethnic and racial groups, but also for his figures, which might not add up. On the weekend, Sky News became a full-on dumpster fire when they interviewed Blair Cottrell, a man who's on record thinking a picture of Adolf Hitler should be in every classroom. BuzzFeed were not just the first to break the story of Emma Hussar and the allegations of bullying, but also got her to announce she would not contest her seat at the next federal election. Should BuzzFeed have published, and where does public interest begin and end on this story? And to all the news junkies out there who may have heard the buzz in your feeds about ABC Life, well, it launched on Monday, and despite the warnings, the sky hasn't fallen in yet. Joining me in the studio and across the country, we have Ben Doherty, who's the immigration correspondent for The Guardian. Hello.
Good evening.
Kathleen Calderwood, who is the ABC's Western Suburbs producer, and she's also been awarded the Andrew Olley Scholarship in 2017. Hello.
Hi.
And joining us on the line from Melbourne, Cara Waters, who is a small business reporter for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Hello.
Hi, everyone.
Now, Andrew Bolt is no stranger to controversy, but last week, The Daily Telegraph, The Herald, The Courier Mail, and The Adelaide Advertiser all carried an article attacking immigration and arguing in a near hysterical tone that there is almost no us anymore. And if by us, Andrew Bolt meant all the first generation Danish immigrants working for News Limited, the no us is fast disappearing. The article was highly inflammatory, and almost every sentence could be used here to illustrate its heightened attack on immigration. But here's one to give you a flavour of Bolt's viewpoint. In Melbourne, North Coalfield, 41% of the residents are Jews, including hundreds who've lately fled South Africa. While most of the News Limited papers who carried Bolt's piece presented it dryly, The Daily Telegraph really got into the spirit with a headline saying, "Foreign Invasion," and a cartoon of a collection of different ethnic groups sitting down to eat a pie the shape of Australia. The white man in the middle looking less than impressed. Let's kick this off with a Dorothy Dixer question to the panel. Did Bolt go too far? Cara, I'll give it to you first.
I think he definitely did, but that's what Andrew Bolt does. I mean, I read the Herald Sun because it's my job to read it, but I generally just ignore Andrew Bolt's column. I read it for the occasion of this show, and it's pretty horrible. And yeah, I think he shouldn't have written it in the first place, and it shouldn't have been published.
Ben, what's your take?
Look, I think, one, it's pretty lousy journalism. He got a lot wrong. There's lots that's factually incorrect there. He got his numbers wrong. He essentially doubled the number of people of Chinese ancestry or born in China in Box Hill and these sort of things, and manipulated figures to try and prove an argument that didn't exist. So, again, looking back, you know, he got knocked over a few years ago for falling foul of the Racial Discrimination Act. I just think he fails to check his facts, and it's just poor journalism. But the other thing I think that's really dangerous about these sort of pieces, and I agree with Cara entirely, that I'm very surprised that it got past and editors' eyes and published, is this way that the migration debate and discussion about immigration is used as code for talking about race. And you know, the black letters are, look, I'm talking about immigration, but really I'm talking about race here. I'm talking about people who don't speak English, people who aren't from a Judeo-Christian background. And I think that's a really dangerous path down which we're heading. And I think when someone like Bolt, who is, for like him or loathe him, has a massive readership in this country, he opens up a space for people behind him to use this sort of language, to use this sort of pejorative language, dehumanising language. All of the sort of trends we're seeing in immigration reportage in this country at the moment is kind of enabled by columns like that kind of push the boat right out, and then people sort of fall in behind with that sort of stuff. I think it's a really dangerous trend, and rightly there needs to be a measure of pushback against it. My question is, and I think this is something that lots of people are wrestling with, is how strongly do you push back against something like that? Because that's essentially what he's looking for. He's looking for controversy. He's looking for clicks. He's looking for debate and outrage and all of this sort of stuff. These things need to be called out and opposed, but it's almost falling into the trap.
Oh, look, before we delve into that deeper, I just want to get Kathleen's take on it as well.
I would agree. I think it was poor journalism. He, regardless of whether the stats were right or wrong, he was bringing in all these different elements of it, race, language, small businesses, all that kind of thing. And I think the immigration debate is a difficult debate for us to have, but it's probably one that needs to be had. Mm. And I don't think this added anything to it constructive really at all.
And I think a discussion and a serious discussion about immigration policy and how it's set and how it's controlled that are absolutely legitimate subjects for journalistic interest and public discussion. But this kind of quasi pseudo debate around immigration, which is really about race, I think is a dangerous trend.
And what about the term us and the way that he used us? Because us, I think we all know who us is. Us is white, English-speaking Australians. We like a meat pie. We like the footy. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Oi, oi, oi.
It just kind of leaves me cold. You know, there's kind of strange talk about Australian values. I don't know what they are. I don't know that I share many of them with someone perhaps like Andrew Bolt or others. This idea that we have to be homogenous in the way that we see the world, and that, I mean, democracies are built on debate and discussion and disagreement. People don't all have to think exactly the same. And I think this idea of making an us and them is, you know, I mean, the countless examples in history of dehumanising and distancing people, you know, as prelude to more nefarious activities. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, it's a really obvious trend.
I mean, I always find the us quite hilarious in a disturbing way, because I'm an immigrant. I moved to Australia when I was 6 years old, but from the UK, so I look completely Australian, sound completely Australian, and I'm pretty sure that I'm not in the them that Andrew Bolt is focused on, but in reality, I am an immigrant, so I find it quite interesting in the way he tries to demonise all immigrants.
And I suspect Andrew Bolt thinks I'm an us, but I was born in Singapore, so I'm not sure.
And that's the whole fallacy to his argument. I mean, basically, unless you can trace your ancestry back to, you know, Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people, we are all immigrants, including Andrew Bolt, you know, most famously. So where is the argument here other than a racial argument? And an argument that is, when he uses the word colonisation, he uses it in the most tone-deaf way that's even imaginable to use that word.
Well, 100%. I couldn't imagine how offensive it must be to Indigenous Australians to hear him complaining about Australia being colonised. But that aside, I just think he has a very different set of Australian values, in inverted commas, to a lot of people in Australia. You only have to walk around Western Sydney to see that not everyone looks like Andrew Bolt. And that's not just on so-called monoculture places, which I would argue with anyway, like Lakemba or, you know, those kind of places that he pointed out. But you walk through the main street of Parramatta and it is a diverse place of many different kinds of faces and people. So I think, you know, he just is picking on one set of values for a very carved out audience that he thinks he speaks to. And I don't know what the reaction might have been from the people he was trying to talk to.
Look, at the same time, Bolt is lamenting the loss of us. ABC journalist Osman Faruqi found himself on the end of a lot of online abuse simply for entering the plastic bag debate. I mean, how worried should we be about the toxic nature of what's going on in our public discourse at the moment? Because it's toxic.
It's stopping people from having a well-considered, thought-out, intelligent debate. Like, we're all entitled to our own opinions, but if you're going to get shut down over something like plastic bags, like, Osman was fearful for his safety as far as I was reading, getting death threats and things like that over some plastic bags. I think that's a bit extreme, really.
I think it's interesting as well that you see this flow-on effect from this really toxic, as you say, language in publication, and then it's spilling over onto social media. And I think when we move on to talking about Sky News, it's quite interesting that some of the fallout from that has been against some female journalists on Sky News who spoke out and said what happened was inappropriate and were subjected to horrendous abuse on Twitter.
Yes. And look, as Ben mentioned earlier, Robert Mann, writing in The Guardian, has pointed out some of Bolt's figures, you know, to underpin his arguments, were rubbery at best. And you know, in light of the general outrage, I mean, should News Limited as a company pull Bolt's article? Ben?
I don't know, and I don't know what good it would do. You know, it's it's kind
it
of
it might
you know,
just feed into
look,
it.
It's the old, and you know he loves and lots of commentators love to claim self censorship from the pages of national dailies and broadsheets that have you know circulations of hundreds of thousands. I'm not exactly sure how they're being silenced. Look, it's the old Churchill. I don't know if it's a Churchill quote, but everything eventually gets attributed to Churchill. You know, the lies halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to get its boots on, sort of thing. I mean, it's out there now. People are talking about it. I think it's important that it's discussed. But I mean, pulling it now, I don't see achieves much.
Okay.
I think there's a large element of performance to what Andrew Bolt does too. It's not journalism.
Yeah, I think a lot of these sort of comment pieces, and look, you know, we live in the kind of age of the commentariat and the age of outrage. I suspect a lot of these views that are kind of being pushed around aren't terribly deeply held. They're pretty shallow, and people put them out there for clicks and for attention and for the controversy and the outrage that follows. You know, the Twitter firestorms and whatever else. That's exactly what's being sought to be generated.
But just going back to that performance aspect of Andrew Bolt, which is definitely there, but. You know, unlike, say, Mark Latham, the performance aspect is that he is a serious journalist. He presents himself as that. Clearly, this is not the work of journalism that we would normally recognise, even though it might, you know, if you're looking at it in the way it was presented in some of the News Limited papers outside the Daily Telegraph, it actually looked a bit like journalism. Does that trouble you?
I think it was, you know, he was spitting out a lot of facts and figures, which were, you know, found to be incorrect, sort of in the follow up. But if you were reading that as a reader of the Daily Telegraph, I can see why, or the Courier Mail, or whoever else, I can see why it might have come across as a legitimate article. I did read it as a bit like he's spitting out a lot of facts and figures, but not really making much of a point with those facts and figures. Yeah, I guess that is a dangerous element of what he does.
I mean, you know, it was in the opinion pages. It wasn't presented as news, but and comment pieces have existed for a long time. But they need to be grounded in some sort of facts. You can't sort of base your argument on this faulty foundation, essentially. And I think that's perhaps pointing to a broader issue. You know, with the sort of diffusion of media, and you know, I'm sure we've spoken on this program before about media bubbles and all those sort of things, that we almost don't have a kind of agreed set of basis facts from which to debate issues of significance, and you know, and of, in this case of national importance, because everyone's sort of cherry picking their own facts that they choose to believe that reinforces their own worldview. We don't have a kind of shared foundational understanding of what we're talking about, which I think leads to pieces like this.
Before we move on, Cara, is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I just think it's interesting that there has been complaints to the Press Council about this, and Andrew Bolt has said that he is not going to respect the Press Council process. So it's sort of like there've been complaints. There appears to be, from Robert Mann's article in The Guardian anyway, clear inaccuracies and false statistics, and it doesn't seem that there's anything that will happen about it.
Well, from Andrew Bolt, let's make a big jump and move on to Sky News. On Sunday, Adam Giles interviewed Blair Cottrell, and after the interview, up went the social media posts promoting the interview, and suddenly all hell broke loose. A 20-second Google search would tell you all you need to know about Blair Cottrell. He's a far-right figure, not credible in any sense of the word, unless you happen to have a picture of Adolf Hitler on your wall. In the aftermath of the interview, Sky News pulled the interview, deleted social media posts, and issued a grovelling apology. Adam Giles' program has been suspended. American Express, Specsavers, and Huggies have pulled their ads. And everyone at Sky News seems to be very, very sorry. And if that wasn't enough, Blair Cottrell posted on Twitter and since deleted a tweet joking he might as well have raped Sky's Laura Jays on air. Now, seeing Blair Cottrell's credentials were there for everyone to see, how the hell did he end up on air, and does Sky News need to do more to convince us that they've learnt from this event? Kathleen, what do you think?
Well, they've suspended Adam Giles' show, which I think says something. I find it hard to believe that they weren't conscious of what kind of controversy this might have caused. Obviously, there's been some pretty big consequences for Sky with the pulling of the advertising deals and stuff like that. But I think they were probably putting him on to be provocative and it was successful.
This is no accident. This is page one of the Fox News playbook. And this has been done before by Sky. They push, they go until they get the requisite amount of outrage. They walk it back a little bit. They do it again. It was recently around some of the straps that were put on the Outsiders program on the weekend. Mm-hmm. This sort of controversy is deliberately confected and then sort of mealy-mouthed, apologised for, and then done again. There is no accident about this. Everyone knows who Blair Cottrell is, and this was quite a deliberate provocation. And you know, the fact that we're even discussing about a self-confessed Nazi being given a platform on
I don't know why I'm laughing.
I mean, it's just how have we got here? That's the question. It's just scandalous.
So okay, so what you're saying is Sky News's official thing that they're a bit like Icarus and they flew a little bit too close to the sun. That's not the case here at all.
I'm not privy to Sky's editorial decisions, but I just can't see how this is an accident.
Yeah, like you said, 20 seconds and you can see who he is. Like, how could you not know? Yeah.
He has appeared elsewhere, though. So you can say, I mean, no, in no way condoning his appearance on Sky News, but I think other outlets have justified it in the way he was presented. I do think that though there appears to be a real lack of editorial oversight in allowing him to go on and allowing him to be presented in the way that he was as an activist where he's actually a convicted racist.
Well, look, Craig Emerson has resigned after 5 years as a commentator for Sky News. Apart from his disgust, he said the reason for quitting was that his father fought against the Nazis and was a prisoner of war, and to his way of thinking, the normalisation of the far right was for him a problem, but he couldn't ignore or just smooth over. Is he right here? And the media are normalising and embracing elements of the far right.
I think in some cases they're amplifying them. I mean, this is a bloke who hosts a meeting, and four men and a dog turn up, sort of thing, and they're giving him a national platform. I mean, we're sitting here talking about it now. This has been a news story for 3 or 4 days. They are being dragged into the kind of mainstream of the political debate from the extreme fringes where they are. And look, I've seen other arguments around that, we should listen to people and then, and to ideas we don't agree with.
This is beyond that.
Yeah, but this is a whole new level. I'm all for free and fair and open debate and a free press, but sort of bringing these kind of extreme ideas, these absolute, beyond the pale ideas, and presenting them as a legitimate political opinion is just, it's just outrageous.
Well, look, in this situation too, I mean, Sky News is about to go out regionally on free-to-air television. You know, at night, it clearly is aping a Fox News model.
They're a very different place at night time, I think, Sky News.
Yeah. So, I mean, not that we can do anything about this. How worried should we be about the direction that Sky News is going? Also knowing the weight that it holds and the fine journalists that work there.
Well, and that's who I feel sorry for. There are some really very strong, very straight down the line journos who call it, I think their gallery team, Spears and Gilbert and Jays, those guys do a really good job, and they kind of are constantly being undermined and undercut by this kind of wildness at night, as Cara said.
The interesting thing is, I think what will, as you mentioned, what will hurt here is the advertising, and that's what will have the power. It's not all everyone getting on their soapbox and saying, "Oh, how outrageous!" It's if this sleeping giants movement, which is pressuring advertisers to pull their advertising from these sort of programs, is successful. That's what will change the tone. Money talks in this instance, I think.
Well, now it's my turn to be cynical. I mean, we've seen this sort of thing happen before with 2GB, the sponsors pull out. But when it all quietens down, they go back. I mean, is this going to be a situation here with Sky News that, people are saying, okay, we don't want to be obviously associated with Nazis, but when it all quietens down, they'll go back and they'll be sponsoring Sky News at night?
Yes, that is definitely the cynic's answer, and it's a bit depressing, isn't it? That's the case.
Okay. Now, look, BuzzFeed first broke the story on Emma Hersler being investigated for bullying back in July. And last week, they published a huge scoop. And let's just say that Alice Workman's story on Labor MP Emma Hersler hit Australia for six. The article was based around a leaked letter from lawyer John Joseph Whelan listing a series of allegations that range from workplace bullying, spreading false rumours, and acting out a famous scene from Basic Instinct. The article was explosive, to say the least, and here's where it gets messy, because Hussar has rejected the claims, and the most sensational being the scene from Basic Instinct. And the person in the letter who's mentioned to have witnessed this move, Jason Clare, has also rejected the story. As of today, Emma has said that she will not contest the seat at the next federal election and still rejects all allegations. She said that while she's not perfect, enough is enough. So while the story has come to some form of conclusion, I still want to talk about this, and as I think there's something to debate and unpack inside of what's just taken place. BuzzFeed have been criticised since the story was published. The question I have is, should they have published, and was it in the public interest, Ben?
Show me an editor who would have knocked back that story if a reporter got it. It was a story every day of the week. Has Emma Hussar been treated unjustly? Has she been denied natural justice? Has she been essentially hung out to dry? Absolutely. Absolutely, she's been treated unbelievably unfairly, and this has been a brutal smear campaign against her. She hasn't been hung out to dry by BuzzFeed. They've got a very, very strong story. There is an investigation into a sitting MP. It involves the use of public funds as well, you know, Comcast, all this sort of, which we've looked at on both sides of Parliament. This is a story. Obviously, the Sharon Stone thing sort of captured, you know, a lot of the salacious attention. But there is a story here. It was good journalism that got it. It should have been reported. I think any editor in the country would have run it. Has she been treated unfairly? Absolutely. And this, I mean, I think this says more about the state of Australia's political parties than it does about Australian journalism.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, BuzzFeed obviously are working here off leaked information. So,
they had the story cold. It was right. No one's saying they got it wrong.
I agree. Alice Workman's a very, very good journalist. I find it hard to believe that it wouldn't be watertight, especially to publish something like this. You would really want to have all your ducks in a row. I do think, you know, that we haven't been able to, you know, we haven't seen the results of this report. And obviously today Emma has said that she is not going to recontest the seat. So that will be quite tragic if she is exonerated in a few days. But I think the story is sound.
Yeah, but it illustrates more the sort of descent of Australian politics. I mean, if you're a young woman with political ambitions, why would, you know, young man, anybody, why would you go into this? No, these are people on your own side who are leaking this. Like, it's just the brutality of all. Like, she really has been treated appallingly.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing there is what you raised as a female politician, because I think the sexual nature of some of these allegations as a female, cannot recover from that. Like, so devastating. And that's a really difficult double standard, I think.
Do you think, Cara, Barney Joyce was treated differently?
He's still kicking, isn't he? Still, as opposed to her. So, yeah, it does seem that these were an ongoing investigation that wasn't concluded yet. Some of the claims, it appears, may be untrue. There definitely does seem to be, you know, an issue there. There's 20 different complainants. There does seem to be an issue. But, yeah, it does seem that the standards for Barnaby Joyce and Emma Pusick are a little bit different.
Well, bringing up Barnaby Joyce, I mean, on the question of public interest, I mean, has what happened to him also broadened the definition of public interest? Because I do remember when that story broke, there were a lot of journalists who were caught flat-footed at the time, thinking that it wasn't in the public interest, and then retrospectively saying, you know what, it was. Has his case, in a sense, opened the floodgates here? Even taking out of the obvious sexism between the two cases?
It's the public funds, isn't it, that both of them, it makes it very clear cut, I suppose, that that's public interest
I think I agree, but I don't think you can take the sexism out of the argument, to be honest. Like, if this had happened and Barnaby Joyce hadn't, I still think it would have rolled out in much the same way.
I also think Barnaby Joyce sort of campaigning as a, you know, as a family values campaigner, campaigning against same-sex marriage, all the while conducting an illicit affair while married to somebody else, I think completely undermines your credibility. And I think that alone would have been grounds for a story. But absolutely, the public funds every time. There is always public interest in the way our money is being spent or misspent.
Okay. Well, look, the consensus is that public interest here is really clear cut. But I just want to just end on political commentator Peter Van Olsen. He said on The Insiders on Sunday, regardless of the truth, the allegations have basically ended her career, which, you know, that's come to be true. But, I mean, the point that he was making, the truth really wasn't actually an issue here in the end. And to me, that does underline the importance of making sure that this is truly a public interest story. Mm. I mean, what do you think of his point and how it's all played out?
Look, I think it's been, you know, a grubby and horrible episode. But again, I think it had this process been handled properly, it should never have come to this. These stories shouldn't have been there to be written. But I don't see how, if these allegations are being made and we see elements of it that are absolutely in the public interest, how they can't be reported. You know, otherwise media are sort of practicing self-censorship about what they report and what they don't.
And if there's a letter, I suppose if there's a letter saying, canvassing both the Sharon Stone allegation as well as public fund, you can't sort of report some and not the other, can you?
Yeah. And to be fair to Alice Workman, I mean, one of the points she made on The Insiders was that the ALP have essentially sat on this for about 6 months.
Mm. Yeah, yep. I think that's relevant too.
She also has said, which I thought was interesting, that she feels that people on the left feel very wrong that she published these allegations and that she feels there's been more backlash against her for these allegations than there has been for other stories, which is interesting.
But I also think that says something about the kind of nature of social media blowback, in that she was the sort of darling of the left when she was pursuing Michaela Cash. And she had everyone cheering for her. I mean, the sort of vicissitudes, you know, wash back and forward. And often as a journalist, if everyone's angry at you, you're probably doing your job pretty well.
Yes.
And finally, on the Fourth Estate, there's been much talk about ABC's lifestyle website, ABC Life. It launched on Monday, and no, it wasn't the ABC doing BuzzFeed, but more a friendly lifestyle website using mainly content from various arms and channels of the ABC. The response to the launch has been mainly positive, although it seems The Australian is not a fan. Jeremy Poxon has got my award for Tweet of the Week when he tweeted, "Surely for balance, Auntie must also launch ABC Death." So after all the gnashing of teeth and worries about the ABC taking on BuzzFeed and Junkie, the truth was little more than a nice portal into the world of the ABC. Ben, have you checked out ABC Life?
When I knew I was coming on this to talk about it, I had a look this afternoon. To be honest, I was neither here nor there about it. I wasn't sort of brutally offended by it. I didn't think it was absolutely amazing. I mean, it's sort of just starting off. I think there is a lot of those sort of sites out there, and you know, you can certainly raise the question whether that's sort of core ABC business for the national broadcaster. But I'm not deeply offended by it. I thought it was fine without being remarkable.
And Cara, you love a good recipe. Have you made it part of your daily routine?
I do. Some of the columnists they've got on the Infreeder are particularly good, I have to say. But the thing is, I mean, I agree. I don't think, you know, it's setting the world on fire, but it's, you know, the ABC has always done lifestyle content, you know, Gardening Australia, Play School. It's not all serious, hard-hitting news. So I don't know if it's quite as revolutionary as some people may think.
Yeah, yeah. I'm old enough to remember Peter Russell Clark. Now, you know, the claims that the website was going to be an ABC buzz feeding itself, you know, they clearly turned out to be wrong. I mean, the one serious point I wanted to talk about here was, you know, did the ABC kind of mess this up by not correcting the record sooner? Because clearly they were never going to BuzzFeed themselves. They let that stay out there for a long time before they corrected it.
Maybe they took it as a compliment. Maybe they're still working to a more of a BuzzFeed style.
I'm finding it hard to get sort of terribly exercised about this. There is from some quarters of the media a kind of concerted effort to sort of tear down essentially anything the ABC does. As I say, I think it's fine. I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing for the ABC to do, but I don't kind of have terribly strong feelings about whether you caught the BuzzFeed this or ABC Light or whatever. It doesn't bother me.
Well, that's it from us on The Fourth Estate. Thanks to my guest Ben Doherty from The Guardian, Kathleen Calderwood from the ABC, and Carl Waters from Fairfax. Next week, Peter Frey will be back in the hot seat. Make sure you subscribe to Fourth Estate on your favourite podcast app. You can also talk to us on Twitter, and our handle is Fourth Estate AU. My name is Anthony Dockrell, and thanks for listening. Oh, and if you think it's been a rough week in the media in Australia, well, this is a small slice of InfoWars after they got booted off Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, and iTunes.
You'll never defeat the human spirit. You'll never defeat God. You'll never win. Never. And this is where we get tested. So rejoice to God Almighty for this animating contest of liberty. Ah!